Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Without another senator here, we'll call this the subcommittee of the subcommittee of the General Government Ways and Means. We welcome you this afternoon. We're first considering House Bill 3606. Mr. Ken Rocco is from the Legislative Fiscal Office, represents that office today, independent of clerk. We would like to get a brief explanation from Mr. Rocco, and then we'll call Senator May Yee for
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I provided committee members a revenue impact and a fiscal impact associated with House Bill 3606. This bill has already passed the House by a 55-2 margin. It was sent to Senate rules and elections, where it was passed out as a due pass recommendation referred to Ways and Means. Basically, it allows owners or lessees of pollution control facilities used in certain pulp and paper mills to participate in the state's tax credit program. It only applies to pollution control facilities certification applications made on or after January 1st, 1999. You note on the revenue impact statement, there's an estimated reduction in general fund revenue of by approximately $1 million for the 1991 biennium and at least $2 million in the 2001-03 biennium. This is an estimate provided by the Legislative Revenue Office. The fiscal impact identifies some other funds limitation needs of the agency, approximately $64,000. Based on the applications that they may receive under this, and currently they're allowed to collect 1% of the certificate value on new applications up to a maximum of $15,000 per application. And this $64,000 other funds is based on a total of $6.4 million anticipated in the total certificate value of 1999-01. And the fiscal impact also identifies the need for one position, 0.5 FTE.
Thank you very much, Mr. Senator.
In the revenue impact statement, could you explain in this paragraph, let me read it to you. Although the expansion in the bill relates to a specific industry, and most likely to a specific company owning or leasing a pulp paper or paperboard facility, overall provisions are expected to result in significant increase in application for and utilization of tax credits. How does that happen? What in the bill, is my understanding this bill applied very specifically to the methodology, and it looks as though there are words in the bill that would allow greater expansion in that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Chair, I believe that according to the Department of Environmental Quality, there is language in the bill that would expand this to a broader group of individuals than just a single one company. And
they're shaking their head no back there. I think we need some sort of an understanding of, do you know where in the bill it goes?
Mr. Senator, I'm not sure of how it could be solely identified to one particular company.
Okay.
However, perhaps the
you will have
the people. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Senator Troll. We'll invite Senator May Yee to come forward. Thank you for honoring us with your presence here today, Senator Yee, and we do have Senator Yee's testimony as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm State Senator May Yee representing Senate District 19, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here to support House Bill 3606, of which I'm a co-sponsor. In late 1998, the Environmental Protection Agency promulgated the cluster rules, which are environmental mandates for pulp mills across the nation. These rules require installation of additional environmental control equipment at pulp mills at great expense within a very short time frame. At the same time, the pulp industry worldwide is in a deep slump with very few mills making a profit. I have such a mill in my district, Pope and Talbot's Halsey installation. They are faced with a $35 million expenditure for these environmental upgrades, which must be completed by year 2001. Passage of House Bill 3606 will enable Pope and Talbot to trade or sell pollution control tax credits to a third party, which would finance, construct, and or own the facility under a sale leaseback arrangement. Unfortunately, at this time, Pope and Talbot is one of those companies which have shown no profit at this mill in the past few years. They lost $17 million in 1998. At the same time, passage of House Bill 3606 will allow for outside financing that in turn will be done at much less cost to the company and to the third party as well. This is a company that employs more than 200 people in blue-collar jobs, paying an average of $74,000 per year. Additionally, more than 700 jobs are held by people who work for companies who serve as vendors for Pope and Talbot. Loss of these jobs because of a forced mill shutdown would be disastrous for Linn County, which already has one of the highest unemployment rates in the state, not to mention the loss of income taxes these people presently pay to the state. Also lost will be property taxes paid by the company. This situation faces a company that has been an environmental leader in Oregon, having helped organize and finance for three bienniums the recent Willamette River study, which I helped sponsor 7 years ago. The company's plant is already the most environmentally advanced operation in the Northwest, if not the entire West, with incoming industries being granted immense tax breaks to settle in Oregon. It just seems fair that a long-time Oregon company and industry could be given an opportunity to finance environmental upgrades mandated by a federal agency in a way that would be least onerous financially, as well as saving hundreds of well-paying jobs. I urge the subcommittee support of House Bill 3606 and respectfully request that you move this to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much, Senator Yee. Other questions of Senator Yee? We have a testimony before us. It was my pleasure yesterday afternoon to do a little bit of dynamic modeling as opposed to the static modeling, which we do at the state level with Senator Yee. Depending upon whether you just go for a couple of years or whether you go out for many years, the income tax collection at 7% by the individuals on their jobs, including the multiplier effect, over a 10-year period is nearly $12 million. And Senator Yee and I worked on a number of issues there, and it just depends upon how far you want to carry that out. So we do have some dynamic modeling, and we can discuss that perhaps if it becomes, and we do have folks here from the Pope and Talbot that could discuss some dynamic modeling and the potential effects to the community. Are there other questions of Senator Yee? Thank you again, Senator Yee. You honored us with your presence. We appreciate you being here. We'll call on Representative Jeff Krupp, a member of the committee, who, I think it was our rule that acronyms were 25 cents apiece, but members of the committee sitting at that table automatically were just a dollar and then just 10 bucks for each acronym.
Mr. Chair, I heard his speech on the floor today about the incredible economic problems that mint farmers are having. Maybe we should move away.
Break in the piggy bank for him,
huh? Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen brings up an interesting point. He made a sympathetic remark. It's my experience that you couldn't sell an entire truckload of sympathy in this building for 5 cents. I think your plan to charge $1 for openers is probably the prudent way to go.
Thank you, Senator, for going in.
Thank you
for drawing the motion, Representative Hansen. Representative Kraft, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm State Representative Jeff Kraft from District 37. And it is a different perspective sitting here in front of you as opposed to sitting with you behind the dais there. I will tell you that I am here to testify in support of this bill to share with you the reasons why. And first and foremost, I think it is because my farm is literally across the road from this mill, literally. And over the years, as a volunteer firefighter, I've been out to that mill many times. I've been out to that mill as a guest to tour the facility, to see what I consider to be certainly the most proactive company in this business today in terms of the pulp and paper market, in terms of their environmental record, and in terms of their environmental direction that they've chosen to go. This company consistently over the years has been so proactive that one of the great achievements that they've been able to achieve over the years is that when they return water back to the Willamette after processing it, they return it with less pollutants than what is allowable by their permit. Now, they don't have to do that, but they've done that because that's the prudent thing to do. It's wise in terms of business, but it's also environmentally and socially appropriate to do that. And I commend them for that. I'm also here in support of this bill because of what it means to this mill. It keeps this mill alive and it keeps it running. As you have before you testimony, this mill lost $17 million last year. That's 200 jobs. These are my friends and my neighbors. Literally. These are people on my fire department with me. These are people that contribute to my local community in so many ways. I want to see their jobs go away. This company has gone, I believe, above and beyond the call of duty in terms of being environmentally friendly. And I think that they truly need this help to keep this mill going. I don't want to see these jobs leave. And I believe that is truly what is in danger of occurring here if we don't grant them the ability to sell or lease part of their pollution control tax credits that they have accumulated. When you don't make any money in business, and I will tell you, unfortunately, there have been years on the farm that I haven't made any money in business, and you don't pay any taxes, you can't use any tax credits that you have. It's simply not possible. And when this mill loses money because of market conditions, even though they produce the finest product in the marketplace, product that is in the paper that is before you, even though they produce that because of market conditions, they can't make a profit out of this mill. And that's why it's so important that we have this legislation and that we pass this legislation and that the governor signs it into law. These people need to be able to use their pollution control tax credits to their fullest advantage. If they were making a profit, they would be using them anyway. Well, they're not, and they can't. And that's why we need this bill. I would ask you to look very favorably upon this concept. I think one of the things that Chairman Butler just talked about is that, yes, there is a revenue impact to this bill. But what would be the revenue impact to my community, to the state of Oregon, if we lost these jobs and they shut this mill down? It would be far, far more severe in the long run. We can balance environmental issues, and we can balance jobs. And I think this company has done a marvelous job of doing just that, and I think we need to go the extra mile for them, because I think they've gone the extra mile on their end. And I urge your vote to pass this bill on to the full Ways and Means of the D-Pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for Representative Krupp? One comment, Representative Krupp, that I just wanted to capitalize on for just a moment was the issue of pass credits. This bill, and my understanding, and I want to make sure that your understanding is the same relative to the revenue impact proposed by legislative revenue, applies to applications for credits made after January 1st of 1999. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, perhaps I misspoke, but I will tell you that when you talk about these issues, they qualified for these credits. Had they been a profitable mill, they would have been able to have received these credits anyway. And all we're essentially saying is here is that the only reason they haven't been able to use these credits is because they haven't made profits.
And relative to the issue of the water is it taken partly from the stream and the stream and part?
Mr. Chair, it was taken from the Willamette River and is sent back to the Willamette River.
Representative Messer is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Krupp, are you aware or are you familiar with the law? What kind of window do they have to use these credits? Do they have 5 years to use them or 10 years to 15 years?
Mr. Chair, Representative Messerly, I don't recall that offhand. I wasn't aware that this bill was coming to our committee today, so I didn't have an opportunity to review that. It's been a while since I've seen the bill and worked through it.
Okay. Senator Strill is recognized.
I don't know, President Krupp, if you're the person to ask this question, but I do have a question about it. In the fiscal impact, it talks about the need for the one-half FTE in the department. It says the bill would increase the number of tax credit applications to be reviewed by the Department of DEQ, Department of Environmental Quality, resulting in the need to add 50 FTE full-time employees to assist the current tax credit coordinator. Why would if it applies to a single company, why would there be so much additional business for the DEQ?
I think thank you, Senator Crow. I think Legislative Crystal will address the half-time position, and we may have an alternative for that half-time position. Yeah, the fence side.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to figure out whether somehow or other this is broader than just a single company.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trill, if I may bring a point for your consideration. Generally, pulp and paper prices are depressed, but specifically depressed for their particular type of product they produce, okay, which is very high-grade quality pulp for the making of paper. And some other things, but that's primarily what they do.
Well, we have another mill close to Albany, the Kraft Mill. Is the Kraft Mill, can the Kraft Mill do the same thing? They've been losing money, too?
Mr. Chair, that's the Willamette Industries, Senator Trow, and it's my understanding that mill is profitable. I question seriously fiscal's analysis of this, their speculation that it may increase applications. This is the point I'd like you to consider, is why would any mill that is profitable, that has the ability to use the pollution control tax credits that they can acquire, why would they sell them or lease them away? It doesn't make logical sense. I would not do it if I were a businessman. And I will tell you that I question whether there would be any other mill in the state of Oregon of this nature, of this type, that would currently today qualify. Now, I don't know. I can't speak to that. There are other representatives of the industries here who could. And I seriously question whether there would be any additional impact beyond the Halsey Mill. I do know the Halsey Mill qualifies. But beyond that, I do not believe there are any others that I'm aware of.
Some factors that we need to understand that make the Halsey Mill non-profitable
profit making while, make the hull no profit making while the other mill is not.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Trow and representatives from Pope and Talbot are here today are far more able to speak to that than I am.
Thank you, Senator Trow. Any further questions for Representative Trow? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have Jack McIsaac, Mike Flannery, and Patricia Worthington. Whittington, I beg your pardon, Patricia. If you'd like to come forward representing the Pope and Talbot. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourselves on the record when you speak as you wish, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jack McIsaac. I represent Pope and Talbot here at the legislature. With me is the president of Pope and Talbot, Mike Flannery, the director of taxes, Patricia Whittington. Before we get started, I'd like to answer two of Senator Crow's earlier questions. One, with response to the revenue question of $2 million per biennium, which Mr. Rocco told you about. There were two revenue assessments given on this bill. The first one said $2 million, and a newer one, after we met with Mr. Waters, who did the original assessment, was put at $1 million for the second biennium. In the packet you got from Pope and Talbot, there is a breakdown of our response done with a dynamic model in response to that revenue adjustment. Secondly, I think that
that's the difference between the one and the $2 million, the dynamic model rather than
Mr. Chairman, Senator Trill, the assessment done by revenue, the first assessment required or said there'd be a $1 million effect in the first biennium and a $2 million effect in the second biennium. We discussed this with Mr. Waters, and he changed his assessment for the second biennium from $2 million to $1 million. Secondly, the legislation is drafted so that it applies to bleached craft mills only. Willamette Industries is not a bleached craft mill and is not subject to this legislation, the one in Albany. There are two other mills in the state that could be subject to it. With response to the Senator's question regarding opening the floodgates, so to speak, that legislative fiscal analysis we interpret as saying, yes, people could think about doing this, but they in turn would have to pass the legislation at a subsequent session of the legislature if they wish to do this. This bill affects only the leachcraft system.
Well, only possibly establish a precedent, and so others could come through the same process.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Crowe, yeah, I want to say that. I don't.
Okay. Sure. But anyway, if they want to do it, they have to do the same way you did.
That's correct. And with all due respect to you,
can I just ask a question with regard to the bleachcraft mills? Pope and Talbot at Hall is a bleachcraft mill. The other two mills are.
I think Mr. Flannery can answer that better than I more technically.
Okay. And do we know whether or not they are? They're currently compliant under the cluster rules.
We expect them.
The other two mills, I believe, Chairman, is Boise Cascade and James River at Wauna, and I believe they've all fully complied with it. So perhaps I can turn around to my mill manager and ask him that question. Yes, that's correct, he says.
And those, from what I know about Boise Cascade and James River, certainly James River has enough drop base that it's probably fairly profitable. Boise Cascade has had some ups and downs, but by and large, are they profitable at this point?
They are, but the tax calculations obviously are complicated because it comes back to the allocated Oregon income that you have. This is the only mill that we have in the state, so when we don't have income, I gather we don't have income that's allocated to Oregon of any consequence. The other companies with worldwide operations and converting operations in timberlands in the states typically will not see the fluctuations we have. They'll have plywood plants and lumber plants and sawmills that will produce income and offset the cycle. We've only got one cycle that we live with within the state here, and that's the pulp cycle.
Okay. So they probably, when they are any kind of a any kind of conversion that they've done, any credits that were available at that time, they would have utilized those services, I guess.
Yes, sir, and as the representative Croft said, if you've got income, you would not turn around and try to sell and lease back these credits. Yeah. In fact, it costs you money to do such.
So, the chances are, if this is limited to the Bleachcraft mills only, the other two mills already having taken care of that, were just, this is really the only mill that this would affect, this legislation would likely affect, unless it was a new mill that came online.
Well, that's my personal opinion.
Thank you very much. Representative Croft is recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Steiner, what will happen to the Halsey Mill if we don't get this thing done with the governor vetoes it? What truly is going to happen to the Halsey Mill?
Well, ultimately, that's a decision that can only be made by my board of directors, so I would not presume to make that decision for them. But without this ability to use these tax credits, it raises, obviously, the very substantial cost of the investment. And considering the investment performance we've had there, it's very likely that they will choose not to do such. And that really has only two courses that will follow after that. The investment will not be made by us, possibly. If they choose that, the mill will shut down. Or it will be sold at a terrific haircut to somebody else that could use the tax credits, and that company would make the investment, and the credits would be used. Ultimately, the way I would interpret it is there is no negative revenue to the state. Ultimately, any answer to this thing will either allow the mill to continue, or you'll lose all those wages at the facility. So, but the tax revenue from the credits will either be used by someone else or by us if it's passed. I don't think it's likely that somebody will be able to buy the facility and do this investment in time to avoid the permanent closure of the facility.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. Did you want to proceed? Or was there other questions?
Sure.
Representative,
maybe I can re-ask my question now. I asked the question earlier what the window was for the tax credit. The chair passed me a note that I believe it's 3 years, and you might have better
answer them.
Would it be of value to your company if that window was broadened for a 10-year window?
I believe the window you're referring to is the time frame in which you can actually use the credits. There's a 3-year carry forward if you're in a loss position, and a 10-year period of time in which it's used. In our particular case, probably not, because the cycles themselves last 2 or 3 or 4 years, and you've got 2 or 3 or 4 years in which to try to recover. So you'd have to have a massive change in that 3-year period of time to be able to say you can use it. And then the company itself would be unsure whether that would in fact be allowed, and allowed to happen, will happen to you. And the boards in these cases like to have some firmness in the conclusions that they're reaching.
I'd like to change directions a little bit. I'm from now on the South Coast, two states south, so I'm very familiar with this what's happened to Harder in the International Paper Belt. What would happen for the fiber that you're now utilizing should the mill close?
We purchase, obviously, a very significant amount of sawdust and chips from the local sawmills in the area. And with the closure of the mill, that would, they'd have to find other markets, which are very much further distant from their current locations. And the freight companies would, in fact, get the benefit of it, but it would hurt their bottom line quite significantly. One alternate market, which has not been good, is the overseas market for chips. A lot of chips go to Japan. The craft mills in California have basically all shut down over the last 3 years. There's one left. And the other market would be to go north to Washington State. So,
just a comment to the committee. I think it's a real serious problem. We have lost the one plant in Coos County area, South Coast. We've got one of our export facilities which is closing down, warehouses very shortly. And there's tremendous fiber available that we're not going to have a market for if the state doesn't address the issue of what kind of a climate we have for this type of industry.
So that's revenue that could be lost locally in Coos as a result of this shutdown. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to add something to the answer to Representative Messley's question in regard to the window. The Environmental Protection Agency has mandated that this window be made even smaller. This must be done by 2001.
or the mill will be shut down by the EPA. So there are several windows, and we're going to have to jump through all of them.
I might add, if I may, that there are two other circumstances that are current that I'm aware of where companies have faced similar decisions as this one. There's one in Maine by the Sankey Corporation, and they chose not to make the investment in pollution control facilities for whatever reason they have there, and they're closing the mill. And Kimberly-Clark in Mobile, Alabama has also had to face the same thing. Their investment was bigger than ours, but they've chosen not to do it and close the mill. So these things do happen. And they are very, very substantial investments that need to be made. We will have spent almost double the amount on pollution control facilities in the time we've been there compared to our original investment in the facilities, in the production facilities.
Thank you. Further questions of Mr. McIsaac as he's presenting his testimony? Do you want to wish to continue?
Well, Mr. Brunner has a fair testimony. Okay. I think that the committee would
Mr. Flannery?
Yes, sir. This may be a little repetitious because you actually covered a lot of things, but I will go through it. For the record, my name is Michael Flannery, and I'm the president and the chief operating officer of Copeland Talbot. We are a company that's headquartered in Portland, as you're aware, and we're the oldest forest products company in the United States. We are actually going to be celebrating our 150th anniversary in existence this year. We do operate this pulp mill in Halsey, and we do also operate several sawmills in other regions of the country, in the United States and Canada. And I'm here in support of this bill, obviously. And once again, to make sure we understand it, it is for bleached kraft pulp and paper mills in the state. And its purpose is to be able to allow us to use a common method of financing known as the sale and leaseback method. And currently, these credits are available, but they are not available to be used in this mechanism. In the sale and leaseback, a company will sell a facility to an investor and then it leases it back to operate the business. And that does allow a significant reduction in the capital cost of making that investment. The American Can Company built this Halsey mill in 1968, and it's actually the newest of its kind west of the Mississippi. We became a partner in the mill in 1978, and we became the sole owner in 1983, and we paid slightly under $38 million, under $40 million for the mill at that time. And we've invested $40 million already in pollution control equipment and are facing this additional $35.5 million. It's one of the most environmentally advanced craft mills in the world, and we've had an excellent record of compliance with these pollution control laws.
Yes, sir. Mr. Flannery, if I may, for just a moment, and make sure that Ms. Loriana, do you have a copy of the letter from the governor that Ms. Loriana just handed out to us just a few moments ago? Are there extra copies of the letter at the front there? Yeah, I've got a copy of the back of it. Okay. We'll get you a copy of it. One of the...
you can have it.
We have a copy.
You have it?
Okay, thank you very much. The second paragraph from the governor, he is concerned about credits and pollution as well, talks about a review and recommendation by an interim tax review committee regarding credits. Let's see. One of the recommendations calls for an update of the Pollution Control Tax Credit Program in order to bring it in line with Oregon's natural resource policy objectives and reward only those companies that exceed now what is required by law. We're in 1999. Do you exceed now what is required by law presently in 1999?
We exceed the regulations that we're operating under. The regulations that we'll be operating under in 2001 when the new regulations are put in place, we do not live within at the present time.
So it in fact is the cluster rule regulations which have been promulgated federally, which must be in place by 2001, which we are trying to accelerate to. But at present, so this is of record. We want to make sure that this is a company which exceeds the requirement which is presently law.
That's correct.
All right. Thank you very much. And we'll make Governor Kitzhaber's letter of June 2nd, 1999, directed to Senator Starr as the chair of the Rules Committee, and part and parcel of the record, and each of you have a copy of that. Please proceed. I beg your pardon. I needed to make sure that we understood that.
Yes, sir. Pollution control tax credits that we presently have were enacted by the Oregon legislation in 1967 to encourage environmental expenditures by the existing businesses in the state and to attract new industry. And over the years, these credits have helped bring to and keep many industries in Oregon. When pulp mills earn taxable income, these credits are helpful, obviously, and unfortunately, the Environmental Protection Agency and other federal and state agencies impose these new environmental requirements even during the low points and downturns of the industry's business cycle. And the pulp business has been in such a worldwide downturn for several years now. In addition, our industry must also compete with pulp producers from other parts of the world that are not nearly as protective of their environment as we are. And as mentioned earlier, our company lost $17 million in the Halsey mill this past year. And I would add, though, that in spite of the troubles we've had there, last year was only the first time we've ever taken that mill down for economics or market-related downtime. We've been a very good, stable employer in the region, which we're very proud of. This mill, however, would help level out the effects of this business cycle for bleached kraft pulp and paper companies, because outside investors who invest in pollution control facilities would be able to obtain the credit, as you know. Those investors can use that credit, and in fact, what they'll do is pass back the credit to the company in the form of the lower cost of funds. The cluster rules, as previously mentioned, are what is bringing the subject up now, and the bleached kraft pulp mills like Halsey must install this additional control equipment by spring of 2001, or we'll face a federally mandated shutdown, and this involves, in our case, a $35 million investment.
Just once again, I beg your pardon, Mr. Kleiner, but I just wanted to, I'm reading an article from the April 19th, 1999, Pulp and Paper Weekly, Pulp and Paper Week, talking about a Westbrook, Maine mill that is working towards compliance of the, well, I guess it's not working towards, it actually closed this mill. As a result of the cluster rule, they indicated that it would be approximately $50 million in that particular mill to bring it up to compliance. I understand that you're talking about an investment of around an additional $35 million. Is there some significant difference between the Westbrook Maine mill and your mill and the equipment that's being installed?
I'm not aware of what its individual requirements. Each mill will have a different situation. That's the Sappy mill in Maine that I mentioned earlier. In our case, the $35 million is really a continuation of the previous $40 million that we invested earlier this decade to bring the mill into total compliance. It's gonna, in our case, it takes the bulk of the two investments in our case.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. As Senator Yee mentioned earlier, we've got 200 employees or so at the mill. They're paid $74,000 a year, including their benefits. And we also think there's about another 800 multiplier jobs that depend indirectly on the Halsey mill that we would lose in the state if in fact, the mill shut down. We pay around $500,000 a year from property taxes at the mill, and we believe the employees pay income taxes on the order of $800,000 a year. And they would decline in the surrounding country and surrounding counties as the workers left to find other jobs. All in all, we believe the Halsey mill generates much more in tax revenue than the amount of these tax credits we're talking about. And we feel strongly that the bill is revenue neutral or actually positive under our argument. We've existed in the state for many years. We've grown with the state, and we've contributed to the welfare and growth of the Oregon's economy through corporate participation, attractive wages, and by paying our share of taxes. And we believe this bill would help us and companies like ourselves to contribute to that on a continuing basis. And I urge you to pass this bill to the floor of the Senate with a due path recommendation. So that's all I have to say, and I'd be happy to continue to answer questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Klein. Senator Lynn is recognized.
Yes. Thank you very much for the testimony. It seems to me that by the 2001 the company has to invest over $35 million to upgrade the EPA standard. And even though this bill passed, that's 3606, you're still able to survive after you already, according to the information testimony, already $40 million you invested, another $35 million that the talk that the world market is down now. Is that, with this being passed, are you able to survive if you're on 2001?
We intend to try, Senator. Certainly it's that kind of performance and concern that gives board of directors real heartache and find a hard time making these decisions as two companies have decided not to do it. But it's a major part of our company. We're just a small company, and this mill is a big part of it. So rather than toss it out with the bathwater, we're going to try to stay the course of it. So, and this bill will go a long way towards helping the board make that decision. Without it, they're certainly going to have great possible fun.
Follow up, Senator Lynn.
Question that the company has been existing for 50 years. That seems to be just grown with the state of Oregon. And personally, hate to let the company go. Somehow we need to help the company out to survive.
Thank you, Senator Lund. I appreciate that comment. Let's see. I've got a couple of questions that, if I may, but you probably have some testimony beforehand.
I actually don't. Mike has prepared something that I do have to answer.
Well, I need to know, number one, how the credit works, and number two, just some of the logistics of how you would go about without a great deal of detail, how you would go about the savings that you would receive in being able to sell the credit, what the credit amounts to, a total, so that we can try and tie that into the revenue picture, and then what work we're going to go through to the state, the EPA, and the Department of Revenue. Both believe that there's going to be some impact to them. So if you could kind of bring us online as to what, first of all, the amount of the credit on $35 million worth of equipment.
Mr. Chairman, the credit is granted for half of the cost of qualifying facilities. So on a $35 million facility, it would be half of that amount. Credit is granted over a 10-year period, one-tenth per year for 10 years, with a three-year carry forward, as was mentioned before. What Pope & Help proposes to do is enter into a sale lease back with an investor who would purchase the mill from us. We would then lease it back and operate it and run the mill. It's a very complex transaction, something we don't undertake lightly, but necessary. With the proposed legislation, the investor, the owner of the mill, for the period of time they owned it, would be able to take the benefit of the credit as a tax credit on their Oregon tax return. We would continue to operate our we'd look at it as a savings in the cost of financing of the property, and that's how we would evaluate it. It would be like a reduction in interest rate, though the transaction is more complicated than that.
So you would anticipate that a bank would be an obvious, or a lending company, insurance company of some sort, would be an
that's
obvious
correct.
Purchaser of the credit, because they would be the lending agency. They would have substantial Oregon revenues against which this credit would be offset.
That's correct.
Okay, and the maximum carryover of the credit, if it was a law proposition, would be 3 years of each one-tenth of the credit.
Right.
The credit would be a total of $17,500,000.
That's an estimate of half of the cost of the facility.
And so on $17.5 million, divided by the 10 years, it would be a maximum of $1.75 million in each year.
That's right.
All right. I told Representative Messerly that I thought it was up to 10-year credit, so I'm redeemed in part because my recollection was it was a 10-year credit. It is. It's taken one-tenth at a time for 10 years, and any amount that's unused in that year is carried over up to 3 years. So what we have is basically $1.75 million, half of the $35 million qualifies for the credit, $1.75 million per year for a period of 10 years this year. And then any credit not used in that year would be available for a carryover. Is any portion of it available for carry back?
No, none is available for
carry back. Senator Crowe is recognized.
what was, as I understand what you all intend to do, is you intend to sell the mill, and I presume that profit. And one of the things that makes it possible to sell the mill at a profit or without a profit, my guess is you're not going to sell it and lose on it.
That's correct. We wouldn't be able to do that.
All right. And one of the things that makes that possible is this credit. You're not going to be able to sell it otherwise. And you're going to lease it back. And that's guaranteed that they'll lease it back to you all.
It will be built into one transaction.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. And they or you get the tax credit. Who gets it?
Senator Cho, Mr. Chairman, they would be entitled to the tax credit with this proposed legislation.
And there would be a guarantee that all of this environmental in upgrading would take place as part of that.
That's correct.
So they would use it for that specific purpose of the environmental upgrade?
Yeah, as part of the transaction, all of this would be included because nobody would buy it if there weren't guarantees that all of this would happen. We would have to make sure that the construction was occurring.
Now, who's going to buy it now?
No, we don't. No, we don't.
How do you know anybody would buy it?
We have discussed with banks and different potential investors that there is a possibility for it. So we don't know for certain.
Okay, so we may be giving you a tax credit you can't use if we do this.
I hope not.
Let me just so that we understand the sale and finance of the facility, the $35 million enhancement would be part of an overall package, which would probably be inert with regard to the balance of the sale of the facility. Actually, it would be for the purchase of the machinery and equipment and parts, and would probably be just worked out as part of the finance package. So I think that's what they're looking for. Is,
how do you know so much about this?
you'd be surprised who doesn't own their own buildings around town. Okay. Representative Krupp.
Thank you. Senator, in response to your question, the new pollution control equipment is not installed. The mill cannot operate regardless of who buys the mill. So it would make logical sense that a buyer of the mill would obviously have to install that equipment. Otherwise, the mill would simply not continue to operate. There would be no reason to buy the mill. I wanted to ask how much credit, unused credit, has Polson Talbot acquired currently that you're just not able to use that you can carry forward for the 3-year time period?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cook, we were granted a credit about 3 years ago that was approximately $11 million over a 10-year period, and we haven't been able to use it in the last 3 years.
But 11 a year, or is that?
No, 110 per year. Right.
And that would not be subject to this bill because this is only for January 1st, 1999 carryover, I believe.
I'd like to clarify that. A new owner would be able to submit an application for recertification, and if that was granted by the DEC, yes, they would be able to take advantage of that credit. I believe it's included in our materials that have been handed out to you.
Mr. Chair, but to clarify that, every year this drags on, you lose some of that because it's a 3-year carry forward, correct?
Right.
Okay, so if another year drags on before you sell, how much do you lose of that?
We would lose approximately another $1 million worth of credits, $1.1 million. And each year forward, we would continue to lose that.
Okay. But it's important for the record that only 1/10 of it is generated and earned per year. And so even if they could sell, even if they were 5 years into it, they could only sell that 5-year period, not the historic. Is that correct?
I'm sorry.
The carryover wouldn't be available for it.
Any credits that have been taken on our tax return are not available to other investors. It would only be those that have not been taken by us. So dependent only be wherever you're at in the 10-year period left would be available to a new owner.
The tax carry forward portion as well.
That will continue to remain with Polson Talbot.
For the 3 years and then spin off
right.
one
right.
Senator Krupp,
control.
What guarantees will we have that the tax credits that are gained by this new company, and we don't know who that's going to be, what company it is, will be used, the money equivalent to those tax credits will be used to pay for these new pollution controls? That's going to be all in the contract?
I think he hit it on the head. Nobody will buy the mill without knowledge that the investment's going to be made in the facility. So, pardon?
Do that again.
Nobody's going to buy this facility or invest in these pollution control facilities without being assured that you're in fact going to construct the facility and have it built. So I think that ultimately is the assurance.
Similar to a mortgage on a home, they would be lending on the purchase of the equipment.
But you folks are selling out, and all you're going to do is lease it.
Let's revisit that. Okay.
Keep talking about
a buyer and a seller here.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, the sale of leaseback is a common feature in Safeway stores, Albertson stores. The capitalization of all sorts of new construction and new buildings.
And not based on pollution.
Well, I think you're connecting the two things, and although they are germane, Senator, I don't know that they haven't assumed more importance because of the connection than they really need to. The pollution controls, and the pollution, the strategy for using pollution tax credits is a newer one used in a sales leaseback formula. The sales leaseback is certainly a very common business practice, and it's used essentially capitalizing our capital construction, but in maintaining the cash flow and the capital of the lessor. And it's not a matter of Pope and Talbot selling out. The very first facility Pope and Talbot ever operated in the Pacific Northwest, the facility up in Washington State, and as of about 5 years ago, you were still operating that facility, and I think it's still used as a transshipping facility today. It's called Port Orchard.
Port Gamble.
Port Gamble. I guess if somebody's trying to characterize the company as a temporary tenant of the $40 million facility, I would guess that was a mischaracterization.
I don't know that I'm trying to do that. I'm trying to understand what's going on here. And it seems as though you're going to be selling, and somebody's buying, and you're going to lease and run it. And they're going to have the tax credit, and they're going to make the upgrade that has to be made. Is that what's happening?
Let me put it the way my perspective on the thing. We're going to sell it to somebody, an investor, mm-hmm. so we can obtain money, so we can make the investments. We're going to be the operator of the facility, the bank, or the doctors, the attorneys don't want to run a pulp mill. So we get money loaned to us to make this investment at an interest rate that's significantly less than if you just went out and borrowed from a bond to a bond because the tax credits are reducing the interest rate. And then at the end of 7 or 10 years, when the repurchase option comes back, we buy the mill back at that point in time. And actually the repurchase price is a significantly depreciated value from the original investment, and pulp mills don't depreciate. It'll still be worth, pick a number, $50, $60, $70, $100 million then, and we buy the mill back and continue on as if we've always been here and have always been running the thing.
That's helpful. I think a lot of us don't understand that very well.
Senator Fairlawn.
I'm just trying to have, I think, more to do with rebasing the expenditures for the purchaser and for the company, and it's directly connected to the Byzantine tax structure that we've created in this country. Very little to do with anything else.
Now, that may be true, but it's also very much connected to these tax credits.
That's correct.
It's not going to happen unless we somehow or other allow them to use these tax credits.
And I think the explanation is that the tax credits would be available then to the lender, and the lender would thus be able to provide the resource that's needed in order to add the $35 million at a figure that would be acceptable to the user of the credit. Are there other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lemon's record.
How much tax are they? Are we talking about $17.5 million?
Over a 10-year period, it's $17.5 million.
Okay.
Whether Pope and Talbot makes the investment or whether it's a third party that makes the investment, as the the lessor of the equipment in effect, the owner and becomes the lessor of the equipment to the lessee, the Pope and Talbot folks.
Okay, so it's $1.7 million a year.
That's correct. Maximum, based on a $35 million calculation.
And what I'm hearing from them, they are payrolls, some tax, things like that, about the one and one quarter, I guess. $500,000, something, and they are $750,000 of payroll. So, yes, that's almost look like a, you know, it's not quite washed, but it's close enough.
If you took into consideration the common school fund, or the amount that we receive for our school fund from the property tax over 10 years, and then the multiplier effect of the number of jobs that are involved, other than at the mill, it becomes a rather substantial eight-figure number in a real hurry over a 10-year period.
Okay.
And that's the concern we had. Okay, other questions? Representative,
Mr. Chair, I don't see anything in my file from anyone else in the industry. Do you have the support of the timber industry, AOI, or are they neutral on this bill?
We have not asked anybody else, and nobody else has stepped forward, so I can only conclude that they're neutral on it.
Thank you very much. Further questions? We thank you very much for coming, and we do have one other person that has signed up to testify. Thank you again.
Appreciate it. Thank
you. And we'll continue on then. Hillary Abraham from the Oregon Environmental Council.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Hillary Abraham with the Oregon Environmental Council. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. I want to be brief and just kind of highlight some portions of my testimony rather than go through it line by line. First of all, I'd like to say that my testimony today will be in opposition to this bill, but I'd like to emphasize that we are not targeting Pope and Talbot per se. We do actually acknowledge that Pope and Talbot has in the past gone above and beyond pollution standards, and we believe that that's such a good environmental model. We also believe that it's important to keep Oregon jobs plentiful, and we are not in any way trying to target any specific company and lose jobs. Our concern has to do with the pollution control tax credit, which is something that may have made sense 30 years ago, but we don't think that it does any longer. We believe instead that it forces Oregon taxpayers to subsidize large corporations simply for complying with federal law. And I'll briefly just outline some more specific concerns. We believe that this particular tax credit carves out a specific provision for Pulp and Talbot, rather than allowing for reconsideration of the entire pollution control tax credit program. In doing so, we feel that it sets a dangerous precedent for expanding the pollution control tax credit. This goes in the opposite direction of recommendations of the governor's tax force, of which my organization was a member, which recommended the opposite, which was actually narrowing the pollution control tax credit. This equipment that has been acquired by Pope and Talbot under the leaseback agreement would only bring Pope and Talbot up to compliance with federal law requirements, which does apply to every paper mill in the nation. This subsidy does not do anything to encourage Pope and Talbot or any other pulp and paper mill where they may be leasing this agreement to go above and beyond pollution standards. With this leaseback agreement, Oregon taxpayers may be giving the taxpayer to the leasee that Pope and Talbot chooses. We don't know who that third party may be, and the tax credit may in fact go outside of Oregon.
What difference would that make? Can you help me with that?
Well, we believe that if we go outside of Oregon, if the goal here is to try and rebuild Fulton Talbot and ensure that the revenue is maintained in the state. If we are leasing these tax credits outside, then we are not necessarily helping Oregon in and of itself, but we're also discouraging other pulp and paper mills to not go above and beyond current regulations on their own, to not exceed the current standards. So this,
stay with the first issue. What difference would it make if this was, let's say it was a Korean company that was investing in Oregon, and they had large profits in Oregon, and they owed the tax in Oregon? What difference would it make whether they paid the tax by loaning the money to buy the equipment and doing the leaseback versus just paying it outright?
Well, Mr. Chairman,
going outside the country.
My concern is that the money would not necessarily come back to Oregon. And I don't know specifically enough about these programs to suggest that they would or would not. If the dollars would be guaranteed to come back into the state, that probably would be different. But if
talking about tax that would be due to the state of Oregon, the company wouldn't just flee if the Korean company owed the tax, normally they wouldn't just leave the country and not pay the tax.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if my understanding is that, for example, and I may be reading the bill wrong or I may just not know enough about the specific credit, but that if, for example, there is a mill that's outside of the state, you may be, that money does not necessarily come back in, but I could be incorrect in that.
But it's only based upon Oregon tax. It's not based upon a mill that's outside of the state, is it?
Okay.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that we had that correct for the record.
Okay.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you. My final point is that essentially I think that if the main issue is that we need to find, that we need to ensure that the mill stays open because we are looking at losing potential jobs, I think we as a state can look at other ways to encourage economic development and maintain jobs, help Pope and Talbot in another way. But this tax credit has to do with pollution. It does not necessarily have to do with maintaining jobs. And the pollution control tax credit continues to just subsidize companies for complying with federal law. And I don't think that Oregon taxpayers, especially at this time where we're looking for money for schools and for prisons and a variety of other social programs, we should be subsidizing corporations for simply complying with the law.
Do you have a specific suggestion as to how we can help Fulton Talbot with their current issues and get them the $35 million that they need at a reduced rate so that they can continue to operate?
Mr. Chair, I apologize that I don't, but I would encourage the legislature to see if you could find a more appropriate vehicle in order to help them along.
Okay, but no specific suggestions.
At this point in time, I do not have any specific recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You make a statement here that we don't think Oregon taxpayers should have to foot the bill for compliance with federal law. Taking it away from this issue, when I look at the whole Oregon plan and the Endangered Species Act, how do you rectify that statement with what we're forced into doing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Messerly, I think in this specific situation, let me back up. The Oregon plan, I think, is an innovative plan that focuses on collaboration and bringing a variety of different entities together to potentially avoid a variety of different regulations so that we have a greater foundation as Oregonians. And I think that kind of subsidization, such as Senate Bill 1010 plans and things like that, help on-the-ground work to bring Oregonians into a greater, help Oregonians behave in a manner that is more sustainable. When this tax credit was formed 30 years ago, we began to look at pollution in a different way. And we began to say that we needed to adopt things like greater pollution control equipment, things like that, because industry needed to change the way they did business. And this was a way, from what I understand, to help bring them up to speed so that they did not have a great economic loss. Over a period of time, it was my understanding that this thing would phase out. Just like the Oregon plan may eventually phase out because those tenants that are being put in place right now may eventually become more sustainable. hopefully, I think now is the time that the pollution control tax credit has phased out. Companies have known about requirements, and although requirements that come down from the federal government continue to grow as we learn more about the relationship between pollution and the environment, this credit has been around for 30 years, and companies should understand when they're doing their books that things like control equipment are just like things like, they should be part of their administrative costs at this point.
I think your point is well taken, Representative Nationally. I think almost everything we do is mandated one way or another, and the difficulty is trying to find money to help people you go to without Paul. And in this particular instance, I think even Ms. Abraham, the benefit of the doubt, she's done it. Magnificent job of identifying the problem, but I think Pope and Java are 17 million reasons behind it, already having figured that out. So they're already there. Representative Kraft is recognized.
Thank you. One point, Hillary, in regards to your testimony about sending tax credits outside of the state or to another country. That could only occur, in reality it can't occur, because if an Oregon tax credit, it would have to be taken by someone who is paying taxes in the state of Oregon. So it would have to be, if it was a Canadian firm, it would have to be someone who was here already doing business in the state of Oregon. So the tax credit, in the sense that may benefit the shareholders of that company, and those shareholders may not be American, or they could be people like us that own stock in a bank. A U.S. bank came in and bought this. So in that regard, the only way the tax credit can go out, the tax credit is only good for someone who's actually paying taxes in the state of Oregon. So it has to be someone who's made an investment to do business with here. And so that sense, they're like an Oregon corporation because they're here doing business. And it sounds like your testimony says it would, that like the tax credit would go out of state. Well, it can't. It has to stay in state. The ultimate effect of the tax credit may be to benefit people who don't live in the state, or may in that regard.
Any further questions of Hillary, of Ms. Abraham? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate your time today. We had no other testimony signed up, and we have the governor's letter read into the file today. We each have a copy of it. We'll include that with our file on Senate Bill, House Bill 3606.
Mr. Chair, are you wanting to move to work session?
We will. We will, as soon as we make sure there's no questions, any further questions of the group, or any other questions that have come up. If not,
Mr. Chair, I have a couple.
Sounds like Representative Senator Ferriola has been down this road and found it to himself too.
Is this only possible with a state tax or an equivalent tax involved too at all?
There would probably be some federal tax involved, but that would probably not affect our issue at all here, because the federal tax doesn't come into play when we calculate the state tax.
Okay. So. Okay, and also I'd like to ask a question to the president, if I may.
Mr. Flannery, if you'd like to come forward again, take a little share.
It's an amazing amount with the loss of $7 trillion in 1998 alone. And I don't want to go into any detail, but
I don't think he knows either. He's not very happy about it.
And it's like a lot of money. Do you have any other debt of the company and accumulated so far? Are you able to survive? That's my question.
We sold one of our major businesses last year, and so we do have some money in the bank, but our business in Oregon has been a tough road for the last 3 years due to a whole variety of things, one of them being the worldwide depression on pulp prices. As a result, partially of the collapse of the Asian economy, they were a big buyer of pulp. So our outlook is a hopeful return of that business to some prior levels.
One more question.
Follow up.
I don't question your integrity at all,
right,
and of course any other members, but I just make my
the petition into the record, that there is no that the file says when we pass this bill, hopefully that we make sure you have to transfer, not after you go in there, you told the company, my answer, and we are going to go. I want to make sure that things is not going to happen, because we accountable to the people. And so that's my just a concern.
I appreciate that, Senator Lim, and I think that the whoever the anticipated buyer or buyers of the credit of the actual equipment and the plant or the plant and equipment may be, they would probably be very satisfied that they knew that they were well secure before they would extend that credit. And if it was defaulted upon, I'm going to guess that they would require sufficient resources and assets.
I think that the ultimate security between the lender and ourselves, normally people don't lend that substantial amount of money with very tight requirements on the user. So I think that will eventually tie us in very tightly to the facility. As I said earlier, these are business cycles we go through. We continually try to upgrade the facility and stay competitive in the worldwide market. It certainly is possible out there on the low end for the business to collapse completely, and but there will be bigger problems in the Oregon economy than just our facility if that should happen. So our intention on going through all those difficulties and troubles of getting this long pass, obviously, are to run this facility and be here when the 10 years are up.
Thank you very much. It's just Senator Curls recognized.
A couple of three questions. One is the background statement. I don't know whether you can answer this, or maybe staff can, but it says the pollution control tax credit allows a credit against corporation or personal income taxes equal to 50%. I can see corporation taxes, but I don't understand how it works on personal income taxes.
Can I turn to my tax attorney here?
Please. Who gets the personal income tax?
If it was owned by an individual as opposed to the corporation, and here, didn't the corporate, Polk & Talbot is a corporation, and so they're entitled to the corporate, or entitled to the...
She might sell it to some individual.
I could conceive that, say we deal with the bank, and we go to a bank and get the money from the bank, and our deal is with the bank. The bank may in turn recast that amongst a whole variety of investors.
They can sell these credits anyplace. Are they sort of negotiable credits?
Senator Phil, Mr. Chairman, I don't think it'll be. There may be more than one investor, but we'll know up front who those people are. They won't. I don't envision that they'd be tradable.
More than one entity?
We don't know for sure yet. It depends on who has the ability to use these credits. It has to be an Oregon taxpayer, as you've mentioned. It could be more than one person. It would be easier if it were one person, but it may be more than one person.
It might be a person, or it might be... See, there's, over time, there's $17 million worth of tax credits.
That's right.
It's going to cost $35 million to make these improvements, right?
Right.
And they need to do that up front.
That's correct.
Okay. But they're going to get this tax credit over just $1 million a year, $1.7 million a year for 10 years.
That's correct.
So it can be to an individual, more likely to be corporate.
Senator Shaw, Mr. Chairman, the law is set up that way so that in its current form, if you held a business individually, you could apply for the tax credits also. So it's available to corporations or personal taxpayers so that it accommodates all types of businesses in corporate forms, or forms of businesses.
How are we assured, as Senator Lim sort of wanted to be assured, that in the process of this transaction there's not huge profits made at each level? That's not the purpose of doing it, is to make profit. Is there some way you can assure us that the people who lease it, they're not going to make a huge profit, and we're subsidizing it with tax credits, and you, when you sell it, are not going to make a huge profit? So that, you know, the purpose of this negotiation, that we understand it, is to get some pollution control things set up for as an economic a way as we can, not to help make a whole lot of people rich. And so how do we know that?
Ultimately, what we're looking at as a corporation is really the cost of money. It ultimately shows up as the interest rate we're paying on borrowing funds that we need for this investment. So it's in our interest also to keep that as market-oriented as possible. And I think that in the end is the safeguard, because what we're going to be paying this back every year to them, and instead of having depreciation if we funded it ourselves, we'll have payments or grant and interest basically back to them to recapture this investment ourselves at the end of 10 years. So it's not in the corporation's interest to allow something like that to happen.
Thank you. Representative Krupp had a final comment, and then Senator Freya.
What's the valuation of the mill today?
I think it's around $65 million.
Okay, Mr. Chair, so you paid $38.5 million for the mill, and you put $40 million bucks in it.
All right.
So you're, as I read that, you're upside down based on what the mill is worth in the marketplace today, based on the fact that the mill is a specific type of mill that is in a depressed marketplace. Because I'm talking there's a difference in valuation of what coffee tax will say for than what's really worth out there in the marketplace based on the market.
Yeah, I would, in the marketplace, if we had to go and sell it, it would obviously be in a distressed price, and it wouldn't be $65 million. It would be something less than that.
So you've got more money in this mill than what you can get out of in a distressed
price. Yeah, but don't forget, we have depreciated it over time.
True.
Right? The investments are probably $100 million.
So you have to recapture depreciation when you sell? Like I do on farm equipment?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we would have to recapture depreciation.
So that depreciation will come out of your pocket when you sell that mill. You're going to write a check to the government for that, just like I have to. I know, because I just did. Theoretically, the union members could pool their resources, get a loan, and buy your mill from you, and turn around and lease it back to you. Is that correct?
Well, they got to buy it, and then they've got to invest $35 million in it. So.
Right. Yeah. But theoretically, they are, and those tax credits could be credited to each member of that union, correct? In theory?
Yeah, I think in theory they could do that. It would depend on how they did it, how they held the investment into the corporation. Yeah.
Well, the point is that's not what's practically going to be what occurs here.
That's correct.
Most likely.
That's correct.
Okay, but in theory it is possible. You're talking about corporate benefit or corporation or an individual doing it.
Yeah, I think
so. And one last question, then I'll shut up and we'll go on here. The mill lost money for 3 years. Would the fact that we passed energy deregulation help this mill save any money on electricity and try to make a little better profit? Try to make a profit, perhaps?
I'm not sure that's a nest I want to jump in right now, but yes, we're overcharged by 20%, 20-30%, $1.5 million a year on electric bills, we believe, and we're trying to work that one too with the power company.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. And then Senator Fraioli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, the comments of the good senator from Corvallis, I agree with. I don't think it's our business to provide tax credits to overemphasize the profit making capability of any company. But as a lifelong and active tool of the fascist insect, I would rather see a company losing $17 million turn a black ink profit. And if we can structure or help to structure our activities to maintain a state-of-the-art facility that is putting in $30 to $40 million in new pollution controls, and possibly maintain or regain a market share that will justify that kind of capitalized investment in a business, in a manufacturing business in Oregon, that produces significant family wage employment in that area. I think we would be foolish not to do that. So I hope we're going to move this bill forward.
Thank you very much. Any further comments from members of the committee?
Mr. Chair, just to say that this is not without precedent in the United States of America, and certainly not in Oregon. I might bring to everyone's memory the great success story of Chrysler. When they were down on the ropes and ready to go broke, the federal government stepped forward, guaranteed a loan. Chrysler went the extra mile. Management, union worked together. They pulled together, and they have contributed hundreds of billions of dollars into the economy of the United States of America because there was a specific case, specific company that needed help and had huge impacts in America. Well, this is a similar situation that we have, huge impacts
for my local area and for the state of Oregon, and that's why I think it's prudent that we do this. Thank you very kindly. We'll go ahead and close the public hearing session, and we will now open the work session on House Bill 3606.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Krupp.
I move House Bill 3606 in its current form to the full Ways and Means of the DFAS recommendation.
It's been moved by Representative Krupp that we send House Bill 3606 in its current form to the DFAS recommendation to the full Ways and Means Committee. Is there any discussion, objection, comments relative to that? Representative Hanson.
I'll reserve the right to pontificate later.
Okay, thank you very much.
I regretfully offer the no.
Okay, thank you very much. Senator Troy is recorded as a no, and you're a yes on this. All right. I would like to go ahead and ask our legislative fiscal officer if he would just give us a summary before we go ahead. I am concerned about making sure that we address the issue of the potential of the cost. I think we've worked out where the half-time FTE could potentially go away. Would you like to just address
that? Mr. Chair, basically the community has a couple of options. The fiscal impact is really not an issue here because under current law, if an application comes in to the Department of Environmental Quality, they're allowed to collect 1% of that revenue of the credit of the certificate value and then use that money to process the application. The department's estimate is based on receiving more applications than a single application. And that's why there's an impact of $64,000. And that is all other funds, and there's no general fund impact to the Department of Environmental Quality.
Sure. Is there justification for them assuming there will be a lot more activity than this?
Oh, Mr. Chair, Senator Schroeder, based on testimony today, it's clear that this is identified to one specific company. However, the department has read other things into some of the language in the bill regarding contract purchaser language and other things that are not clearly specified. If in fact additional applications come in, the department should always go to the emergency board to get additional expenditure limitations, since that is all this figure of $64,000 represents is a projected expenditure limitation in order to spend the revenue that they may collect from applications coming in. Or
sure, couldn't there be at least some kind of budget note or at least some kind of statement as this bill goes forward that clearly this is a one-time shot for one company?
I think that the parameters that we've got on the public record at this particular time, relative to the actual Beechcraft mills that presently exist in the state of Oregon, and the economy that we're talking about, and the other two mills which have already updated, I think probably really narrow it down in another own definition at that particular point. So I hesitate.
Is this just, can it apply to other than this kind of a mill? Can it apply to other
facilities? I think that the representation in the actual credit itself pretty much defines it.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank
you. Mr. Chair, Senator Sherlock. I think under Section 1, subsection 4CI tends to eliminate other practices. It states that this would apply to a business engagement or production activity described in 40 CFR 430.20 as of July 1st, 1998. And I'm assuming that that's what limits this to the Beechcraft.
What does CFR stand for, by the way, Mr. Chair?
Federal Register, isn't it?
Code of Federal Regulations.
Federal Regulations.
What about this? Did anybody bring that in mind?
such a graphic way of wording. Did at this particular point, is there any reason to modify the estimated income and expense based upon this information, Mr. Rockwell?
Mr. Chair, basically the committee has two choices here. They could add the expenditure limitation to the bill to provide the Department of Environmental Quality with the ability to spend money that they may receive, additional money than they have in their budget from applications received under House Bill 3606, or they could simply direct the agency to go to the emergency board if an application comes in that they cannot deal with within their existing budget.
Within the existing means that they presently have.
That's correct.
And that's available to them whether we take action on it or not.
That's correct.
Okay. So basically, as the motion has been made by Representative Krupp to proceed forward on this, what would happen is that we would go ahead then and just allow the Department of Environmental Quality, the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, to come forward and ask for extension limitations as it receives and needs to disperse the funds. And we neither approve nor disapprove the anywhere from 1 to 1.5 FTEs, so that's a limited duration, or whether that can be handled through Department of Administrative Services.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Currently, the department has a tax coordinator, and then they use their professional service contracts to deal with application activity. Their request was that if there are more than just the one or two applications received, that they may need to bring on additional staff. If that is something that they need to do, they can always do that through the emergency board or through an administrative process through the Department of Administrative Services.
Representative Krupp's motion then would be that we just recognize the ability of the emergency board to deal with any of the fiscal impacts at this time. Are there any objections other than that stated by Senator Crowe to the bill as has been presented to us? If not, be it recorded that Senator Crowe votes no. All the rest of the votes on the committee are aye. Representative Leonard is absent. And this will be a due pass recommendation of the full Ways and Means for House Bill 3606. Let's see. Senator Yee has asked to be able to carry it to both the Senate and the full Ways and Means. And Representative Krupp is the House. It's already been to the House. Representative Krupp already spoke to it, as did I. And I want people from Hope and Talbot to recognize that as the 150th anniversary of your Sesquicentennial, Centennial, this is a Sesquicentennial bill for you. Go forth and do no harm. Thank you. So this goes to the Senate now, and thank you. Grab those. We'll go into a couple of minute recess while we get ready for work session on the other two bills, which are 5547, Senate Bill 5547, and Senate Bill 325. So let's go ahead and go on the recess. Okay.
5547. We will open a work session on Senate Bill 5547 relating to state finance, financial administration, and Dallas Wyant is here to represent the legislative system office.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. On the 22nd of June, this committee passed out Senate Bill 5547, which we passed with a -2 amendment. This is a bill that misappropriates money for various audit assessments, reduction in Department of Administrative Services assessment and Employment Relations Board assessment. After the -2 amendment was passed out, we found some additional consolidation of numbers were necessary and some clarifying language that in the various sections that point out that the purpose of the reductions or adjustments to the various appropriations and expenditure limitations. The bill, these amounts were prepared, have been reviewed by staff and the Department of Administrative Services and its analysts, and they have been comfortable with it. And we recommend the biggest change, I think, dollar-wise, was in the Department of Administrative Services budget. It had already taken into effect or into consideration the reduction by about $750,000 of audit division assessment. And it was, so their budget had been reduced, and we are also reducing it again by that.
So we have compounded. We have compounded one of the reductions which we had already passed on.
So we undid the compounding.
Okay. This is -4 amendment undoes the compounding.
Yes.
So we have the recommendation from legislative fiscal that we repass Senate Bill 5547 with a -4 amendment. Are there any objections?
Mr. Chairman, I so move.
It's been moved that we repass Senate Bill 5547 with the -4 amendment. Are there any objections? Being none, we have I votes from Senator Lem and Senator Ferrioli. I vote from Representative Krupp, Representative Hansen, and Representative Butler, and Representative Messerby. So, being sufficient number to do pass to the full committee, we will repass Senate Bill 5547 with the -4 amendment. Do that in full committee.
We have carriers already assigned.
Okay. So moving on to, we will close the work session on 5547 and open the work session on Senate Bill 325.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 325 was amended by this committee in a -1 amendment on June 23rd. This is to allow certain members in public employees' retirement systems to buy service credit but through payroll deductions, and the amendment was to make it only for those members who were paying the whole cost of purchasing that credit. Subsequent to passing it out, we were using the Legislative Council's amendment. Subsequent to passing it out, we found that there was some more language because the bill dealt with two different things. It had full cost purchase credit and less than full cost purchase credit. We found a few more technical adjustments needed to be made to the bill to clarify that, clean it up so that and so the bill was brought back. And the amendments that do clarify it and list all of it so that there's no ambiguity or contradictory language that the as amended the payroll deduction is available only to those who for full cost purchases. And that is all represented in the -2 amendment that is before you now. This has been reviewed with the Public Employees Retirement System and with our Legislative Council. Again, I must say it was pointed out by some of you in the audience as they went through it. And we're very glad to have you. So we urge the approval of the -2.
Just technical change. And the number of eligibility is about 250 people.
That was the fire one you're thinking, I believe, in Senate Bill 327, which had to do with the firefighters?
Yes.
This one for those people who want to purchase prior service credit or additional service credit who are allowed to by law
at a full cost.
At full cost. Yes. This allows only those people to go ahead and do it, and it allows it to pay all the debt.
Yes, so how many did we estimate?
1,082 annual estimates is what Mr. Delaney has testified.
Okay.
That's based upon last year's estimates.
1,082 in 1 year.
In 1 year.
And on every year, 1,082.
Right, and it probably could go up based upon some of the issues. It might go up for a time, and it may come back down as soon as people realize that they pay full costs, including the cost of establishing themselves with the program at that particular point, so that there's no cost to existing participants nor current retirees, basically was the intent of it. Are there any objections to the to repassing Senate Bill 325 with the -2 amendments? If there are none, being recorded that Senator Farioli and Senator Lim voting yes, Representative Trump, Representative Hansen, Representative Messerly, Representative Butler all voting yes, we will repass Senate Bill 325 with the -2 amendments to the full House, full committee for the due pass recommendation.
Again, we have carriers for the fire. Who's
going to
carry this one to the
Senate,
too?
Okay.
Okay,
give me a good seat.
Okay. Thank you very much.
What are we doing tomorrow? Tomorrow,